So that would be helpful for us to get to. So yeah, so if you can start maybe unmute and say yourself, that'd be great. All right, so Julian, can you just help me to make sure, or Andrea, if you can just help me to see if we have it on the chat, everybody is mentioning their name. Maybe you can rename your name with from yourself and the company that you represent. That could be also helpful.
Yeah. Oh, so I'll see here. There is, okay. Adnan, do you present yourself?
Yeah, sure. So Arnaud Dolly, I'm the founder of Verifizy, and we are actually developing a solution to automate all the document scrutiny and compliance check on documents in trade finance, and therefore on digital data as well. So any platform that can be adopted in the future and have data that was on documents before and is going to transit through these platforms, we wish to be able to make all the compliance checks, sanction screening, and everything based on the data that go through and documents as well.
Thank you, Anand.
There is Alessa Gross from WeTrade.
Yeah, hi everyone. Yeah, that's right. I'm from WeTrade. I'm a UX designer at WeTrade, and I'm relatively new to trade finance. So I try to soak up everything that Mark invites me to, like a sponge.
Welcome, Alessa.
Thank you.
Then comes Chris McNulty. Welcome, Chris. Can you introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Chris. So I work at WeTrade. I'm a front-end engineer. I've started in February, so again, this is a new territory for me as well, so I'm excited to get involved.
Great. Welcome, Chris. I can see Beatrice Dutois, which I guess is from France.
Yes, correct. I'm from France. I started in WeTrade in February, so not that much, and very excited about this new adventure.
Great. And I can say, hold on. The list is quite difficult to be seen. Velko.
Hi, my name is Velko Kokaric, and I joined WeTrade recently, maybe more than a month and a half ago. So my role is a software architect, and I've started looking into the transition from monolithic to microservice architecture on Hyperledger. That's me.
Well, great. Arman, it's your turn. Can you hear me, Pam?
Oh, good morning. Yeah, sorry about that. Oh, I'm trying to find the mute button.
No problem.
Yes, good morning. It's Palm Sanger, IBM. I'm globally responsible for trade and trade finance networks enabled with blockchain, and also on the ICC's Digital Working Group for Trade Finance.
Great. So it's quite difficult to see the whole list. Hold on. Julie, I can't see.
Yes, hello. Yes, Julie Karn. I'm also with WeTrade. In addition to I'm a product owner. So in addition to my interest with WeTrade, also interested in ICC as we continue to evolve the platform with Incoterms and look at other aspects as well to digital trade.
Great. Welcome. I see Alex. I can't see the family name, though.
How are you doing? Alex McAllister.
Alex.
Backend developer with WeTrade. I joined in November. I have a background in telecoms and personal finance, so relatively new to both trade finance and blockchain, so currently upskilling in both.
Perfect. Alan, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, good morning.
Everyone, greetings.
Those are two Alans.
you go ahead.
I can't see the name. I mean, there's one Alan. I can't see.
Yeah, Alan Fitzsimons here, commercial lead at WeTrade. I am responsible for commercialization activities within the member banks and also supporting our head of sales development when engaging with new banks. So, yeah, another WeTrade here. WeTrade out in force to support Mark and the rest of the management team.
Great. I can see Florin Ipa, Jipa, something like this.
Hello, yeah, Florin Ipa. I'm also with WeTrade, product owner. Nice to meet you all. I'm also new, as my colleagues. I started in February, so everything here is very new and very interesting for me. Glad to be here.
Benny Russell, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. Hey guys. So I'm at WeTrade about 6 months now. I'm a software developer, so I have a small bit of experience with the permissionless blockchain. And just getting upskilled in permission blockchain and Hyperledger Fabric.
Great. I can see David Smiths. Welcome, David.
Yes, good morning. So David Smiths from IBM Blockchain Europe, lead architect on WeTrade for IBM.
And the rest I can see Amir Kelly.
Oh, God.
Hello, can you hear me?
Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
Sorry. Would you like to introduce yourself? What to do? Can you hear me? No, she can't. Hello?
Sorry, apologies. My internet connection is something up with.
There it goes.
Sorry, I'll have to.
Okay.
I'll have to dial in again. Sorry, my apologies.
No problem. Niamh, I can see Niamh McLafferty. Welcome, Niamh.
Hi, guys. Niamh here. I'm a developer with WeTrade here since December. How are you?
Hello.
Excellent. Hello. Pleasure to meet you.
Thank you.
Nice to meet you. Is there anybody else who would like to introduce himself?
I think you didn't have Alan Lim, right? Alan? I know Alan.
Yes.
Hi, everyone. Greetings from Singapore. I work for IBM on the blockchain space as well.
Hey, Alan. Good to get you.
Yep.
Great. I think we have a few more people coming in.
Marta, would you like to introduce yourself quickly, as you, so many people here from WeTrade in Europe?
Sure. Thank you, Julian. Welcome, everybody. Marta Gidor-Piparska. I'm Director of Ecosystem for Hyperledger, and I'm based in the UK. So if you are European and you're interested to chat about Hyperledger or use cases or anything like that, always happy to schedule a call with you.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you, Martha. Thank you, Andrea, as well. So I think without further ado, I'll pass the stage over to Mark. And Mark, I will move the slide over. If you just tell me next slide, and I'll just move the next slide. So Mark, over to you. In terms of introducing yourself and going through this presentation.
Yeah, no problem. Hi, how you doing? My name is Mark Gooden. I'm the CTO of WeTrade. And in this presentation, I'm just going to give my perspective or a perspective on the digitization of trade finance. Want to proceed? Okay, so 8 main challenges. As you see, there are a lot of entities, there are a lot of connections, a lot of peer-to-peer connections, and a lot of connections through different entities. So WeTrade is effectively bringing buyers, banks, sellers, banks, and insurers into or onto the same network. Yeah. And what we're trying to actually alleviate, or what we're trying to solve, is a lack of trust and no single source of truth. lack of trust, I mean, between all parties, and you know, so lack of access and easy access to financing or insurance products for buyers or the sellers. There's no visibility of the end-to-end transactions. There's a lack of trust in terms of who's doing what and who's taking ownership during the whole process. Very paper-based, yeah? And, you know, and there's cyber fraud, particularly around IBAN phishing. And we've seen some cases, even with COVID-19, where fraud has actually increased due to less digital ways of actually conducting business. Yeah. So paper-based and fraud risks are two big key areas and where, you know, good, strong digital systems can actually benefit. Yeah. For the seller, we talk about the risk of non-payment and the impact on liquidity, especially if the buyer goes bankrupt or if the buyer faces challenges, etc. So here's where the buyer's bank could step in on behalf of the buyer to mitigate any risk for a seller. For the buyer, they need prepayment, etc. So I think European counterparties, when they're dealing, when they're engaging in trade down in Hong Kong or Asia, for example, they need to do prepayments. And sometimes when they get the goods aren't of the agreed quality, etc. So we're looking to try and mitigate those areas as well. For both the buyer and the seller, then there can be disagreements or risk of the payment terms based on the quality of the goods. So what we are trying to solve here, we're trying to solve a number of these issues here through digitization of trade. Next. Too far. Yeah. Okay. So so what we trade, the main challenges, what we are trying to bring about are a single source of truth. Now it's not just a single source of truth, but it's also to increasing the visibility of all stages of the trade and the goods being shipped. So we leverage Hyperledger Fabric. We ledger smart contracts within Hyperledger Fabric that then, you know, and smart contracts, as we all know, they are digitized contracts of real contracts. And they we use the contractual clauses, more or less settlement conditions, to trigger automatic events. Yeah. So we're taking a paper-based contract and digitizing that in a digital platform. Yeah. And of course, that platform is obviously, it's a secure digital platform that all entities, the participants can access. Yeah, all counterparties, all parties and counterparties are KYC'd. Credit ratings can be sought for any of the parties on the network. We have a rule book. We've spent and we've invested a lot in a rule book that actually governs the behavior of all participants in the network, of the buyers, of the sellers, of the buyer's bank, of the seller's bank. And it already lays out any dispute resolutions for the trades. Yeah, because it's digital, we have faster trade cycles, and they're actually so that, you know, trading can be increased. Yeah, we have a faster reconciliation when things do happen and go into dispute, because we don't have to start going and looking for paper, etc. We can actually have all the information is within the digital platform, and therefore dispute resolutions can be faster. Also, intra-company reconciliations. When you have intra-company trading, you can do quicker and in more advanced internal reconciliations. We have a single digital platform. We're trying to, as much as we possibly can, within our own world, but we're also looking beyond WeTrade and beyond trade finance and looking at how we can standardize trade. And this is where we look to, you know, entities and organizations like ICC or World Trade Organizations, and actually look to their guidance in terms of how we can get harmonization on a global trading, from a global trading perspective. As the more we standardize, the more we can make disparate networks or disparate systems, whether they be trade finance or other networks or systems, interoperable, because we actually have standards. We'll have standards at a data model perspective. We'll have standards at a protocol perspective. So we can then interoperate an awful lot easier and make more and more digital topics. You know, we'll make more and more, like, you know, whether it's the shipper, you know, what can the shipper make digital for us, and we can access, what can the insurer put in terms of a digital footprint and make accessible to us in terms of the data, etc. The same with the buyer, the seller, and even on the bank side. Yeah. So we're also looking at adding, credit and transport insurance. So bringing more value-added services to the platform, but only as a digital-first offering. Yeah, when we're really looking at, and I think all of us that are actually in blockchain now are looking at, how can we leverage this technology to bring a more end-to-end digital experience for all of the participants on the network. Yeah. And then we're looking also again, there's other technologies out there such as, IoT, etc., and how we can actually get access to that type of information, such as a refrigerated truck. How can we get access to the temperature of that refrigerated truck? So, and have that be applicable or a condition on a smart contract. For example, if I'm shipping, or transporting cold meats from Barcelona to Belgium, and that truck has to be, -2 degrees the whole way for the duration of the journey, I'd like to have access to that IoT information from that refrigerated truck to make sure that the temperature hasn't been at 4 degrees for the last 4 hours. So therefore, risking the quality of the goods that are actually being transported. Yeah. Next. So this is an interesting slide. Okay, so we have, this is a holistic idea of, the end-to-end, more in terms of, from a buyer and how they search for a counterparty, how they create a request for the actual trade, how they get responses, they negotiate with the seller, and then ultimately they have an approval. In some cases, the buyer may get the buyer's bank involved for a guarantee. There may be BPU, or there could be auto settlement, again, there to do with the payment conditions of the actual trade. They may or may not avail of insurance, whether it's transport insurance, etc. And we're looking at other value-added services. From the seller's bank or from the seller's perspective, they want to sell their goods, yeah? But they want to do so in a way that's actually removing any risks of non-payment. Yeah. So in some cases, they may look to see that the buyer has actually sought BPU. They may actually avail of BPU financing so that they can say to their bank, I have this order. Yeah. Can you give me the loan so I can manufacture the goods? Yeah. And all of these participants can see on the platform or on a digital offering what's happening, the full visibility, so they can remove any risk of non-payments. Okay. Down at the bottom layer of this diagram, I think is where collectively, I think there is more work. There is work happening to digitize the offerings in these areas, such as the seller and the manufacturing. Are they providing real-time information about the status of the goods that are either in going through the manufacturing process? In other words, that the buyer can see that the seller already has the raw materials, is already creating the product that the actual buyer is buying. Yeah, the loading. So when the goods have actually already been manufactured, can the buyer see, or will the seller allow the buyer to see through a digitized way that the goods are actually already completed in the manufacturing process, are being loaded, that the QA, that the quality assurance professional, whether they be within the organization of the seller or external, the fact that they have actually been requested to provide QA on the actual goods, what digital topics and aspects can be covered there. Again, all party to this, either the same or smaller smart contracts. Yeah, so that everybody has visibility from end to end in terms of the quality of the goods. The freight forward, what digital capabilities do the freight forwarders have? Can they give us access to the route that they are actually taking for shipping the goods? Can they give us access to that IoT information regarding refrigeration, temperature of the truck, if it's applicable to the type of goods being transported? The customs authorities, when things are actually going through customs, especially in the global trade scenario, when we're shipping from Europe down to Hong Kong or Singapore, for example, we're going to go through customs authority. How digital are their offering? Yeah. The port authorities also, how digital are their offerings and what can they give us access to? Because all of these will and can be applicable to a trade between a buyer and seller, or even just point of time information that the buyer knows, yes, I've bought these goods and this is the point, this is where the goods are at any particular point in time. Oh, they are at customs in Hong Kong, or they're at the port in Hong Kong. They're now being boarded onto the ship and the ship is taking this route. Yeah. Again, they've been off-boarded at the port of Amsterdam, for example. Yeah, they're at customs at Amsterdam. They passed customs in Amsterdam. So the buyer and the seller know at every point in time, yeah, what is happening with the goods that are being shipped. Yeah, again, and the same on the buyer for the freight forwarder. So the freight forwarder will go and pick up the goods from the, you know, at the port in Amsterdam, for example. And then they know, sorry, yeah. Not yet, Atul. Yeah. So they'll know that effectively the goods are in transport, that they've picked up from the port. They've also gone through QA. They're being unloaded and the goods are finally accepted. Yeah. And then all parties can actually see all of the details in a digitized way, real time, what's happening, what is the state of their goods, and where the goods are at a particular point in time, so that they can plan better. Maybe the buyer is an intermediary. So they've bought, you know, goods, they bought already pre-manufactured goods from the seller, and they're actually just going to be selling them onto somebody else. But somebody else needs to then understand, okay, when are they going to get their goods? So everybody has access to this information in a digitized way, and then people can plan better. Okay. Next. So this is an idea of a network of networks. You know, so we've talked about, like, literally, so we can digitize, and we are digitizing trade finance within Europe with WeTrade Europe. We have plans to go global. We've already are in conversations and having workshops with TradeLens, etc., regarding, like, you know, possible, you know, integrations and interoperabilities. As people already know and have read, we've already done an interoperability POC with eTrade Connect. So we're not looking at WeTrade all over, although that would be fantastic, but we're not looking at WeTrade all over. We are talking to other, and we will talk to other networks, because we know we're not going to boil the ocean. But we do know that, you know, trade is global, and, you know, we are an enabler for global trade. Yeah. We are not the only enabler for global trade, and we're not the only enabler for digital trade. Atul from DLT Ledgers also doing trade finance digital platform. So I think it's a case of, you know, identifying, you know, what the corridors are, where, you know, where does it make sense for WeTrade? Where does it make sense to interoperate with other networks? And they're not just going to be trade finance networks. You know, there's other networks that we will interoperate with, whether they be logistics and logistics only, or there be maritime shipments, whether they're provenance with Food Trust, as is in this example with IBM, for example. You know, so it's really a case of what's happening around the world, because the world is relatively small in a digital sense. So what's happening around the world, and how can we connect all of these different services together to really bring about real-time information that is fully transparent, and, you know, that people can leverage to make informed decisions. Okay, next. Next topic that I talk about is really about the barriers to digitization. So fear, some people actually are afraid of technology. They are, you know, they would put up any barrier to introduce new technology. Yeah. In some areas, it could really be about job protection, you know, where because a process is slow, cumbersome, you know, the people come along and say, no, I'm going to, like, you know, I am really driven by how many people I employ. So some people actually use job protection as a barrier to digitize. We've all read reports about, like, you know, robots take, you know, we're going to have autonomous robots, and they're going to actually take over 50% of our jobs. Yeah, my question is, what are governments going to do to actually support, such low jobless numbers? We've seen now in COVID-19 where governments a lot around the world are having to step in and make unemployment rates have jumped in some countries 20-30%, and the countries, there are certain countries and they can't support that. But if we kind of digitize and automate absolutely everything, which is the panacea, yeah, then do we need such a big population? Is a question. Market protection. There are some tools, there are some processes or some participants in the as per the second previous slide, and they're looking to protect a market, their own market, and they'll put in any barriers that they can. Yeah, maybe they'll even bring in their own technology. It may not be the best technology, but they'll bring in their own technology. Or again, it could be about people, bringing in people to do a job and carry it out, because it's all about they're afraid, effectively. It's FUD. They're fearful, uncertainty, and doubt. Transparency that it creates. Some people are just adverse to open transparency. And when we're in a digital world, I mean, we're creating, we are allowing people to look inside walls. Yeah, because we have systems that allow the information to, at least we facilitate information flowing more freely. Yeah, we try and make, decide what's private versus not private, etc. But the capacity and the capability is there to make things, to make processes, to make the data more transparent. And some people actually, for some people, it's a barrier. Unions, I put in unions because, we know that there are many unions around the world. And again, the unions are all about job protections, etc. So any times, sometimes when there's new technologies coming in, for any particular reason, they just block it. Yeah. Capabilities to digitize. Maybe some organizations and some areas, they just don't have the capability today to digitize. In the future, maybe. In other areas, maybe the technology is just not as advanced as we like to think it is, and therefore it doesn't actually solve their problem. So they don't have any capabilities to digitize. Non-ubiquitous technological infrastructure. We talk about digitizing everything, and we talk about mobile data, and even in Europe, and I think parts of Asia, they're already talking about 5G. In parts of Africa, they don't even have 3G properly. Yeah. So how can you digitize globally when infrastructurally we're not all set up at the same rate? Yeah. In some cases in Africa, I mean, and I've been there, you don't even get edge as a signal. Now, we're trying to pump a lot of data down on a mobile network that all you're getting is edge. I say, good luck. You're better off using paper. And that's, against my against what I look for being a CTO, but we've got to have a look at the right place to introduce technology. We also have local cross-border regulatory and other laws sometimes, and we've faced a momentous challenge even with WeTrade, particularly in Europe. We have extra laws that you don't have down in Asia or the US, etc., GDPR, etc., and we've had to design a solution that works in Europe and respects all of our local laws, EU law, yeah, and even governmental law. So there are some laws, even though we have EU laws, that you have to abide by in Austria because they're different to laws that are actually working in France and all of this. So we've done this, and it is tough, yeah. Adversity to change. Some people literally just are, they get used to the way they're working, and they just don't want to change, yeah. And then the last one is, sometimes we in technology, we get it wrong. We have best intentions to digitize and optimize and make things more efficient, but we just get it wrong. And I have an example here, a very interesting example. I remember years ago, I was working in an organization, and we were trying to modernize the way the accounts payable worked. Yeah, and they were using mainframe, and everything was all the green and black screens, and they were processing payments, etc. Yeah. And we said, okay, we're going to build you a new, nice, shiny web system. Yeah. and we did. But what we realized is when we actually delivered the web system, and this is back in the late 90s, productivity, and we weren't even really measuring productivity back then like we do today, but productivity decreased, I would say, about 50 times. Because what we actually realized was after looking at why productivity had actually really gone down so much, we realized then that people, when they were using their green and black mainframe screens, etc., it was all keyboard driven. Yeah. And back in the 90s, everything was all mouse and click and everything. So we'd actually slowed them up processing their accounts receivable or their accounts payable, purely because they were no longer able to use their keyboard shortcuts that they knew by heart from mainframe. So sometimes when we introduce new technology, we get it wrong. I don't think this is the case with blockchain. I honestly think that blockchain is an enabler to digitize trade finance and digitize supply chain. We talk about accelerated digitization, especially in times of crisis. So COVID-19, okay, for many has been detrimental. For others, it's opened their eyes. And I say for many has been detrimental is for some of them, there are some organizations, and because of lockdowns, et cetera, their business have been impacted by governmental decisions. For others, and they've invested millions and whatever in BCP, and then they've actually realized that their BCP's planning, so business continuity plannings, were as good for a day, 2 days, a week, not for months. Yeah. So COVID-19 and times of crisis have really forced new ways of working. It has forced a lot of us into in physical meetings. We end up doing more, whether it's a WebEx, whether it's Zoom, whether it's Microsoft Teams or whatever. So we're doing more virtual conferences. Yeah, everything is kind of forced into digital arenas, whether it's Confluence and all of these different tools and technologies to enable a digital workforce and a remote digital workforce, because none of us can get to our office these days. So it's also forcing contactless and paperless engagements. So we can no longer call around to somebody's office and start getting papers signed, etc. And even at that, even if we could, we're told to do social distancing, etc. A lot of organizations have been very quick now to change from signed wet ink to e-signatures, etc. Now, they're actually also saying that, well, this is a temporary workaround. But I think for a lot of us in technology, we want these workarounds that have been introduced for times of crisis to be permanent. Because if we end up going back to paper-based processes, then we're not learning. Yeah, organizations and governments are reacting with momentum now because they're actually removing some barriers that are there for the old processes. Stimulus efforts become available. So I think ICC have also made some stimulus available for SMEs, etc., and other organizations and governments. Supply chains get disrupted. So now people need to look at new ways of working, and digital platforms can actually help that. And then economic uncertainty. Supply chains have been disrupted. Businesses are impacted. People are looking for maybe new suppliers. Maybe some suppliers won't survive. And so people will be forced, other organizations will be forced to look for new suppliers after the crisis has subsided. And I guess this is the last one, which is really, how do we make the workarounds that we put in and we introduce during crisis, how do we make them more permanent? Yeah. And I think that's what we need to be looking at as we continue to digitize trade finance, trade and supply chain. Thanks.
Awesome. That was really good, Mark. I took some of the notes as we sort of, learn from Mark's session, which is, digitization is, I would say, at the new normal, right? And, working together with the several other parties in an open way is the way to move forward. So, absolutely looking forward to work more with Mark and the team as we sort of help digitize the different corridors and different part of the flows. And I think that's a perfect segue for us to introduce and go into the next segment in terms of how you know, the ICC is leading the world in terms of the advisory that they put out for all the governments to go digital and stay digital post-COVID era as well. And none better than Daniel Kwok, our own managing director who lives in Singapore, to talk about what ICC is doing and in specific how some of the employees who are actually stuck at home, specifically in the front office and middle office, trade finance, how they could take advantage of this little bit of a you know, extra time that they've got, so when they don't have to commute to the work, and how they can train themselves for the new normal, and what ICC and Canavan is doing to support this initiative. So it's my absolute pleasure to invite Daniel. Daniel, over to you, and just let me know how can I move the slide over. Daniel?
I need to unmute. Yes, thanks, Abdul. Good morning to everyone and Europe, and good afternoon for everyone in Asia. Thanks for having me today. Just a, you know, I hear ICC's name been organization been mentioned a number of times throughout the day, and certainly happy to, you know, be here. Just as a piece of information, you know, the Academy is the education arm of, you know, the ICC, and today ICC represents 45 million company across 100 countries with a core mission to make business work for everyone, every day, everywhere. Now, for some of you who are not familiar with ICC Academy, you know, we bring the expertise of the World Business Organization directly to the SMEs, the corporates. We work with universities, banks, and many other organizations at the forefront of international trade. Today, with our industry recognized certificates, a host of monthly events with international experts from the ICC network, you know, we aim to fill the knowledge gap for a lot of diverse sectors. So leveraging on our international training models and our dynamic digital learning system, we deliver training in the area of international business, trade finance, regulations and compliance. And over the last 4 years, since its inception in 2015, the Academy alumni has grown with presence over 160 over countries, and we are involved in a lot of our works to support trade finance capabilities, developing ties with global institutions across the world. So the Academy is relatively young compared to ICC, who has been around for 100 years. Yeah, okay. So can I have the next slide, please? Sure. So, you know, I've been invited to speak on, you know, how ICC, you know, helps to get one ready for post-COVID era. And before I go to that area, I kind of like to speak about, you know, how do we start addressing the issues in the first place. I mean, the dramatic spread of COVID C-19, to make it short, has disrupted a lot of lives, livelihoods, communities, and business across the world. So global corporations become one of a paramount importance to mitigate the effects of this virus, you know. And so ICC, within ICC itself, we started looking at three broad areas, which, you know, I highlight here, one of which is the health, the economy, and then the recovery. Now, coming to the health, we're talking about mitigating the crisis. Obviously, there's a lot of communications going out about, you know, your personal health, what you need to stay safe, what you need to stay healthy. And these are works that, you know, in a coordinated response to combat the C-19 pandemic, ICC is working with WHO to collaborate to ensure that, you know, we provide the community with the latest and the most reliable information and guidance for the business community. we started this with, we started the collaboration actually with something that you mentioned earlier, you know, business continuity. As we, you know, in a lot of corporations, the big multinationals, they probably have a BCP plan. Yeah. But in smaller, in a less developed country, in a, for smaller SMEs, and in even some of the bank's clients that we engage, we were quite surprised that, you know, that piece is actually missing. So we started with a COVID-19 business continuity guide that was based on the ICC principles of a COVID pandemic preparation. So we look at plan, we look at adapt, monitor, and then we look at assessed, right? So that's something that, you know, as a start, we look at it. And one of the key concerns during this time was about availability of trade finance. And Mark truly said that, you know, has mentioned that ICC during this period of time has, you know, issued emergency guidance based on the applications of the universal reuse rules for LCs, letter of credits, to provide, you know, additional market flexibility on the processing of transactions. Memos were issued to governments, central banks, calling for emergency legislative measures to void all legal prohibition, you know, with regards to use of electronics trade documents. So this, I think, also helped to drive the adoption of digitization in some countries. There were associated engagement with World Bank, BIS, FSB, and, you know, several key national governments to ensure that, you know, these are all widely communicated. Consultations are ongoing, and I believe that we have somebody from the working committee, and I'm sure that you're aware that, you know, consultations are ongoing to assess the needs for further advocacy engagement to enhance market liquidity and ensure adequate liquidity for trade finance for companies, of trade finance for companies. So these are some of the works that are being currently done by ICC. From the ICC Academy perspective, we supported the movement by creating a COVID-19 resource hub, which you know, share all the information here as part of the initiative. We also started to work on delivering via social media a series of infographics, you know, on how do you perhaps tackle work from home arrangements, keeping your mental health. Things are things that, you know, help you survive this difficult period as well. Next, can I? So, you know, once things are more settled in the sense of looking at its health, then immediately the attention next goes to the economy, right? In the economy, as you described, you know, today we have job losses in the millions, yeah, in some countries, and we have trade drops, volumes and things like that. So, you know, the focus here then become, how do you avoid further disruptions, you know? And to do that, you know, we created a series of actions to aid the ICC. So one of the things we are doing is obviously disseminating a lot of knowledge via our webinar series. We work with ICC on a special edition webinars, and, you know, today we are executing almost on a weekly basis, and these are led by business industry leaders covering a wide range of topics, you know, from how science is fighting the virus, and even the use of force majeure in the contracts guidance, you know, in face of COVID-19, including guidance on arbitration proceeding. And just last Friday, we had a session on the impact of C-19 on trade finance. What are some of the issues that, you know, are being faced by practitioners in the banking world? as well. These live sessions discuss the practical ways of managing today's unprecedented circumstances. And we currently have quite a long series full of events that will goes all the way to July. And all these sessions are complimentary. For some who may be interested more into the health aspects of the C19 tomorrow evening, we have a webinar with WHO to understand better, you know, about the management of risk during the C19 era, to share latest development on testing, immunity, risk profiling, and then how do you manage risk? Companies then starts to go back to the offices. You say, so be sure to join us. And one more thing that we are doing is not just about sharing, but we're also gathering a lot of inputs from our community. You know, we run surveys with collaborations with WHO. These surveys are designed to help policymakers map, you know, business sanitary measures so that they are able to identify gaps as well as tailored government policies to combat the C19. So maximize effectiveness, you know, if you're happy to join us to do the survey, I'll be happy to join, share the link later. Okay. And the last piece, I guess, you know, where I'm coming from is about recovery, right? You know, how do you shape the rebuild? And I think Mark mentioned something about how do you make, you know, things stay, or rather, how do we adopt the best? I think personally, that from my perspective, I identify with what Mark has said in terms of the inertia. I'd like to add maybe a couple of things, points here. I think, you know, stakeholders' engagements are very key to implement any process. You know, many a times, we could be talking to one group of people, gathering in them into the room, getting their buy-in. And then they say, oh, great, we're going to go back to our banks and we're going to deliver this. They go back to the banks, things stay status quo. It's because, to me, one of the reasons is obviously about a lack of stakeholder engagement. Because, you know, in a bank, it's not just about the efficiency, the effectiveness, the profitability. You have your middle office who needs to understand the process, how it changed. Is this going to be more convenient? Is this going to be more effective? You have a compliance and regulatory people say that, hey, are you going to put us out of a job? Are you going to get us fined? So, you know, the points that you raised are truly relevant. And, you know, these are things that I thought that, you know, adoption of any platform, technology, or anything needs that communication with the stakeholders. Otherwise, it's not going to fly. You're not an island. You can't just run things you want and expect everybody to just start adopting it, you know, without their perspective taking into it. So, you know, right. And, you know, assuming that we get out of this in 6 months, where, you know, we have more freedom of movements, then what do you think that the government will be doing? I personally, I think that you will see a lot of QE, a lot of quantitative easing will happen, because governments needs to bring back the economy. They will start injecting money into the economy to expand a lot of economic activity. What area do I see them? Digitization is certainly one of the areas, because they learn from this. And they are, everyone, if I'm looking at it, I will always think that, well, what happened if the second wave come? And then, you know, people will then still continue to need to leverage on technology. As you mentioned, trade is a key piece of any economy. Yeah, you want to elevate trade, you want to elevate poverty, you got to do trade, right? Because trade and trade finance will continue to dominate the landscape, money will flow. So what is ICC Academy doing to prepare, you know, to help our community to prepare? You know, we are training, a training arm. So what we are doing is to help business benefit through training, through a number of programs. So even today, you know, on our website, to help individuals cope during this lockdown. We are offering a number of special subsidized packages on all our online learning programs. You know, I think what's, and from who I hear on the audience today, I think what's most relevant is our curriculum on trade finance. There are two programs here, the Global Trade Certificate, which is targeted at the front and the mid office professional in the trade finance world. You know, it provides a broad aspects of what trade finance does, all the different tools that are available, including, you know, risk management, capitalization, so even, you know, fraud, so that the front office and the middle office understand the depth and the breadth of trade finance. We also have another program, the Certified Trade Finance Professional. That is an advanced program targeted at, you know, product specialists, managers, and helping them understand, you know, the scope of trade finance. As recently, we had done a couple of interviews with a number of leaders of trade finance. One thing that also emerges is that if you know only one product, you are never going to be the head of trade finance. Yeah. So you need to expand your scope. Yeah. You can't be just doing LC and you think that you are going to be the boss of the department. It's not going to happen. Yeah. Unfortunately, I have to tell you the truth. Okay. Yeah. So on this thing is that, you know, and we provide a lot of access to free resources through the COVID-19. In terms of capacity building, you know, ICC has joined up with the World Chambers Federation on an initiative called Save Our SMEs. As you know, SMEs provide something like 70% of the employment in most economy. So if the SME goes, the economy are in a bad shape, so to speak. So we wanted to combat the economic repercussions, and we're working with all the World Chambers and our global network to raise awareness. As a result, you know, as part of it, we also offer subsidized rates for all our certificates in the international business category. Now, I will speak a little bit more about what kind of schemes that, you know, we are working with some of the Singapore authorities, so that it will help those who are in the Singapore later. And in terms of building capacity in through partnerships today, you know, to boost the competency of individuals and to build industry capacity, we're also working with a number of multilateral organizations and universities to deliver that mission. Okay, so if you know of any universities or multilaterals who like to collaborate, please, we're happy to do that. Least but not last, what ICC Academy is doing is that since November 2019, we started a program, scholarship program, because in line with the ICC vision to ensure peace, prosperity, and opportunity for everyone, we launched this program. And today we awarded, you know, 23 scholarships to candidates from Cambodia, Italy, Mexico, Nigeria, Philippines, Uganda, you know, quite across the world. So if you know somebody who can benefit from this opportunity, you know, and they do fit the profile to be eligible for the scholarship, please do share. Yeah. Next, please. Great. I guess I'm going to speak a bit closer to home about the initiatives that we are working on that we believe that will be benefits the banking and the SME community, MAS and IBF. And, you know, I understand we have, we have colleagues from, or we have guests from Europe that may not understand who they are. They, They're basically the central bank and as well as the financial authority that recently announced a launch of a support package for the financial and the fintech sectors to deal with the challenges from the C-19. So as part of that package is to support the training of the workforce to defray manpower costs during the economics contraction. Currently, the ICC Academy is working to get a number of our certificates to be requalified under the new grant scheme. The previous grant scheme, they subsidized the cost up to 50%. In the new grant scheme, the new programs now support up to 95% of the cost. So that's a big jump. So hopefully we'll be able to share more details in a few weeks. That's one thing. We also work with IMDA, which is the, the Media Development Authority in Singapore. With the help of MasterCard, to roll out to promote our e-invoicing solutions program. Now, this program is targeted at increasing financial efficiencies, reducing paper trail, and opportunity to grow businesses for SMEs. Now, we all know that the banks have the digitization, but their clients are mainly SMEs and big organizations. And, having them on a digital platform, understanding to start their digital journey will certainly also push for a digital solution. So with that, we started working and we have a e-learning program on, how do they start their footprint? And why do we choose e-invoicing? Because, when we look at helping a company start a digital footprint, we recognize that every company needs to invoice. If you don't invoice, you're not going to have a business, yeah? So you have that, and so we started that, and we were happy. And currently, we offer a very a subsidized price of just $175 for a program. IMDA is offering, an e-invoicing grant of Singapore $200 to access the program, which means that your cost is literally down to just $20-$30, for that program. And this program is also valid till end of the year, which gives us time to enjoy it. Now, another thing that is happening, we spoke about expansion of trade post COVID-19. And one of the things that if you are aware, Singapore has something like 27 free trade agreements. So trade agreements are still one of the things that you will see happening, I believe, as we go back to the norm of the globe, where we still have the US and the China having, that trade friction, so to speak, and countries continue to have trade agreements. And the question for some, and in fact many, is that some people feel that trade agreements are just trophies for a lot of countries. What does trade agreements have to do with me? Right? And this is where we are, our programs are helped to do, because trade agreements are, we had a trade agreements, and these trade agreements, these free trade agreements, can help a business manage its business cost. So, you gain a better understanding of how trade agreements works, how it can be used to assess new markets and suppliers. I'm not talking about clients now, I'm talking about how can you use trade agreements to assess suppliers? How do you reduce your business costs and save resources by understanding how to benefit from tariff concessions? And we are also working with Enterprise Singapore on this, and we also offer this at a very generous subsidy of 50%. So I mentioned this for Singapore, but for those who are unable to benefit from any of the Singapore government's locations currently, we do offer a Huawei 30% discount off all our online certificates. Yeah. one of the key things that the Academy is working on today, as we adopt, as I said, you know, as you know, a number of face-to-face training are canned, right? But yet we continue to face that demand. So we are working to deliver masterclass style training program via, you know, the digital platform on subject matters like Incoterms. Now, I know that you're probably in the trade finance piece, but it would be useful to understand what Incoterms work, because Incoterms are the tax rules of how do you actually move our goods from one place to another, and you know, it defines the risk, it defines also what buyers and owners are duties are about. Maybe something closer to the trade finance community is the supply chain finance masterclass that we are working on. This will include topics like a review of the SCF techniques, a deep dive into the receivables and payable finance, understanding the process of an effective trade cycle analysis, as well as, you know, a forward-looking sessions on digitization. So in conclusion here, you know, we have this compelling event that now push us to adopt technology more widely. Changes are made and, you know, new habits are formed today. Business need to remodel to make processes work. I hope that, you know, in line with what I mentioned earlier, when we return to the new norm, some of the successful stories, the successful process that we adopt, continue to push on. Is it? Because I think it will be a combination of new and old, but we need to just keep this momentum of improvement and, you know, efficiency ongoing. Now, on my next, on the slide, current slides that I have, you know, basically I share these links to the resources that I have mentioned. So please feel free to explore it. I thank you and thank you for your attention.
Well, thank you so much, Daniel. I know we're a little bit over the time, but it's been yes. So interesting. So I will open it up for questions, but there was already one question that came up, that is there a promo code that you can offer to the trade finance community?
Well, the promo code is on my website. So please visit the website and they can see the website. Yeah.
Perfect. Thank you. Great. And then the second question was in terms of the certificates that you mentioned, the supply chain finance certificate, is that or masterclass, is that something already available, or is something it's in the process of rolling it out, Daniel?
We are in the process of rolling out. We are in the process of putting this under the together with the MAS program. So hopefully, we'll get some news, and then we'll be able to share the dates for the masterclass. It is a series of 2-hour sessions. So we'll cover the topics over a course of, two weeks or so. Yeah.
Perfect. Opening up to anybody who has a question to Daniel or Mark. I know it's a little bit over the time, but if you have any question, feel free to unmute and ask.
Yeah.
Does anybody has any questions? I think it was really interesting. Andrea, do you have any questions on your side, on the chat, or anything that you want?
Well, actually, I wanted to share a thought with Mark. He's still over there. I can't see him.
Yeah, I'm still here.
Hi, Mark. Absolutely. I share the same vision that you mentioned in your presentation about the technology and about the democratization of technology. If you don't spread it and make it at the same level, I guess all the efforts we have put in place would be totally needless. I also have experienced what is happening in strategical areas of the world, Africa namely, and also Middle East. In some places, you don't even have the good network to work on digital. So hopefully the very big efforts everybody will have to put in places, you know, put the very scenarios at the same level. This way will go much faster with digitization. One more issue is to bring in the authorities. Once again, I stress this concept. When you deal with trade finance, you massively deal with the customs authorities, which is also different from port authorities, in my experience. Two separate entities working together, close by, talk each other. They work often in cooperation, at least in certain parts of the world. So the very next effort is to make things in a more integrated way and to bring in also the authorities in the process of digitization in the platform, I'm not saying. I'm not sure they're prepared to do this because they're heavily based on papers. You know, while you have to speak to customs officers, you have to speak to policemen, basically, you know, taking care of customs operations to be done in conformity with what the regulation, the local regulations are. It's hard to speak with them often because they are so stuck in old mentality. But I share the same concerns that you were expressing in your presentation, Mark. And thanks for pointing this out.
Yeah, absolutely. I think in the interest of time, I think we should wrap up. But I think absolutely great presentation, Mark and Daniel.
Yes.
I think maybe we should all give you a full slot. So that's a learning for us as we hung this, because I think we went a little bit over. So thank you so much for everyone to stay on course. And if you have any suggestion, or anyone else in the call who wants to contribute and talk about it, please feel free to raise out now to us, Andrea or myself or Julian. It is community-driven events, and we're looking for anyone else who wants to talk about that. So, yeah, I mean, we should sign off if there is any other last comments from anyone else. Otherwise, I would really appreciate your time, and do let us know if this was helpful.
Okay. Cheers, guys.
Thank you so much.
Cheers. Cheers, everybody.
Cheers, nice everybody.
Bye.
Cheers, bye.